Hi, I'm Chris Burdick, a science and education journalist and book author. My new book is Clamor, How Noise Took Over the World and How We Can Take It Back. It's a call for a new approach to a very old problem. Rather than a long list of sonic grievances, or pining for an idealized quiet past or a noise-free future, I explore the importance of sound and the harms of noise to our health and well-being, to the functioning of our hospitals, schools, and workplaces, and to the preservation of natural habitats. I also dig into the connections between audible and digital noise in the attention economy. And I make the optimistic case that by thinking broadly and proactively about our sound environments, we might not only make our noisy world sound less bad, but maybe even better. Here are five insights from Clamor that I hope you'll enjoy. Insight number one, decibels are not noise. In 1930, a truck drove all over New York City, covering more than 500 miles on a mission to slay the rising urban din. The truck made stops at noise hotspots, and the noise fighters made more than 10,000 sound measurements. They were armed with the latest acoustic gadgetry donated by Bell Labs, which had also devised the most powerful weapon in their arsenal, the decibel. Introduced a few years earlier, the decibel was originally used to calculate the loss of signal power across miles of telephone cable. But thanks to the noise truck measurements, which led to a report by New York City's Public Health Commission and the world's first municipal noise code, the decibel would become the noise measurement in laws, standards, and popular understanding. Does this sound qualify as noise? Is it potentially harmful? Is it a sound that should concern engineers, architects, or city planners? The answers were to be found on a decibel meter. And yet decibels describe just one small sliver of sound, specifically acoustic energy intensity, which roughly translates to our perception of loudness. Decibels do matter, especially at the high levels of exposure that can damage our hearing. But describing all noise with decibels is like the proverbial blind man trying to understand an elephant based on the small bit of it each can grasp. It's led us to underestimate and misdiagnose noise problems and miss opportunities for creative, proactive solutions. The alarm fatigue plaguing hospitals, for instance, is about the sheer number of trivial or false alarms sounding in clinicians' ears, not how loud they are. Likewise, coworker chatter in open offices drives us crazy because our attention latches onto intelligible human voices, while the same decibel level of a background sonic churn is easily ignored. Finally, the most harmful noise pollution in nature isn't the loudest, but the chronic noise that never shuts up and shrinks the sensory worlds of animals that rely on hearing to survive. Insight number two. Noise is more than unwanted sounds. It's unwanted signals. To make the case that the world is getting noisier, many writers, including me, will cite decibel-based evidence, such as spikes in restaurant loudness, the need to crank up emergency sirens to cover a rising urban din, or vanishing natural quiet. But arguably, the biggest noise problem is the shattering of our focus from an onslaught of unwanted signals at any decibel level, including zero. The most challenging quiet to achieve is a quiet mind. There are more than metaphorical connections between audible noise and what Princeton University historian Emily Thompson has called the online cacophony of overstuffed email inboxes and endless social media scrolls. Not only do digital notifications lay claim to our attention with countless pings, beeps, and chimes, but an overload of signals, audible or not, depletes our limited attentional resources in many of the same ways. Unfortunately, we have a love-hate relationship with the noise of distraction. As much as we crave quiet, we also kind of fear it. For example, according to a 2014 study by researchers at the University of Virginia and Harvard, people would rather administer painful electric shocks to themselves than sit quietly in a room alone with their thoughts for 15 minutes. As Norwegian explorer Erling Kagge recalled from the weeks he spent alone crossing Antarctica under his own power, the biggest challenge is to get up in the morning when the temperature is 50 degrees below freezing. The next hardest challenge, to be at peace with yourself. Insight number three. Hearing damage from noise starts earlier and goes deeper than an audiogram can detect. Audiograms are the standard screening for hearing loss. We've all experienced wearing those headphones and raising our hands when we hear the beeps across a range of frequencies. A person with quote-unquote normal hearing can detect those beeps at 25 decibels. but a person with measurable hearing loss at any given frequency can't detect the beep until the volume is turned up, at least to 30 decibels, if not a lot higher. But there's a massive gap between perceiving sounds and really, truly hearing. What we experience as functional hearing requires our brains to sort through and make sense out of a barrage of audio signals. As Charles Lieberman, a leading researcher of hearing loss at Mass Eye and Ear, put it to me, we hear with our brains, not with our ears. If we screen for vision loss in the same way we do hearing loss, eye doctors would ask patients if they detected anything at all on the next line down of the eye chart, never mind reading out the specific letters and numbers. Studies by Lieberman and his colleagues have shown that ears can still reliably detect low decibel beeps, even after noise damages their ability to transfer finer-grained auditory information to our brains. The result, which they call hidden hearing loss, is most keenly felt when we are trying to have a conversation with somebody in a noisy environment, such as a busy restaurant. In this scenario, your brain needs to not only perceive the sounds coming out of your companion's mouth, but to distinguish her voice from all the other sounds, from the piped-in music to the clatter of dishes to every other voice within earshot. This doesn't just depend on the relative loudness of the competing sounds. It depends on things like the subtle distinctions in different voices, the timing cues that help us localize sounds, and the limits of our auditory attention. Insight number 4. Noise hurts our health well beyond our hearing. Noise doesn't need to be super loud to pile on chronic stress and sleep disruptions, both of which are dangerous to our health. Studies routinely show that people living in areas with a lot of moderate decibel noise, often close to highways, airports, and other transportation sources, are more likely to develop hypertension and heart disease and experience heart attacks and strokes. In fact, the European Environment Agency implicates noise exposure in more than 48,000 new cases of heart disease every year and about 12,000 preventable deaths across the continent. While most of these studies show correlation, not necessarily causation, newer research is connecting the biological dots between noise and poor health. For instance, recent full-body PET scans by cardiologists at Massachusetts General Hospital found that over a span of 7 years, people living in noisy neighborhoods were nearly twice as likely to develop heart trouble. Importantly, the scans also revealed that these folks had more highly active amygdalas, the brain area linked to our fight or flight response, and more activity in the spleen and vertebral bone marrow, two key sources of white blood cells that help the body fight off disease, but that can also contribute to artery clogging inflammation when chronically triggered. A few years ago, the accumulating evidence of noise pollution's widespread harms to health led the American Public Health Association to propose that the definition of noise change from unwanted sound to unwanted and/or harmful sound. Their announcement cited numerous studies showing how noise can harm health no matter what we think of the sounds, thanks to shared human mechanisms, starting with the vulnerabilities of our inner ears, but also the connections between our hearing systems and our fight-or-flight reactions, and the fact that our ears stay on guard when we sleep, even after our eyes have shut down for the night. Insight number 5. One of our biggest noise problems is sonic short-sightedness. Traditional noise control is vital, but it's also limited, because it's constantly reactive and based in complaints. Noise control is always playing catch-up, always telling people to shut up, and never taking the opportunities to avoid noise problems and become a positive movement that's for something beyond whack-a-mole decibels. By sonic short-sightedness, I mean ignoring or simply discounting the sound and noise implications in planning and designing our buildings and cities. Open-plan offices, for instance, promise a collaboration boost that's often a bust, according to studies, which also find that the noise makes workers less productive and more prone to take sick days. Restaurant noise is another example. The restaurant noise boom really took hold in the late 1990s when trend-setting eateries in Manhattan started to amp up the high-energy music played in dining areas while removing upholstery, drapes, and other sound-absorbing decor in favor of hard, reflective surfaces, and then plopping open kitchens among their diners. Acousticians are increasingly being hired to fix the resulting cacophony because noise has become a perennial top complaint among diners and a health hazard for restaurant staff. Fixing these noise problems costs a lot more than avoiding them in the first place, especially because neither restaurant owners nor diners want to eat in silence either. Thankfully, finding an acoustic sweet spot is increasingly possible, with the help of 3D acoustic models that let people listen to a planned restaurant, office, or any other space before it's built, layering in sound sources, and then tweaking the design and materials and adding subtle sound absorption until the resulting soundscape feels just right. Thanks so much for listening to these insights. I hope they've made you think more about the sounds in your life, not just the noise. And if you're curious to learn more, I hope you'll pick up a copy of Clamor, available on May 20th, and check out my free Substack newsletter of the same name. Thank you.